Okay, welcome to this really critical situation update for Friday, March 4th, 2022. A lot less joking around today, a lot more serious, practical, hands-on solutions. I want to thank one of my high school friends who contacted me via text, and he was asking, hey, what can we do? Because it seems like we could end up in a nuclear war. You know, what do we do? And he listens to this podcast. Of course, I'm not going to give you his name or anything, but just want to thank him for that. It got me looking through my collection of books, and I found a book that it looks like I had picked it up for a dollar at a used bookstore, and it's called Nuclear War Survival Skills. And it's written by Cresson Kearney. I guess it's Kearney. The reason I mentioned this is because I did a little poking around online, and you can download this book for free. There's a PDF available on a website that I just found out about that has the name of the book as its domain name. So I'm going to give you that website. You can download the PDF, and then I'm going to dedicate a lot of time here to giving out some sites where you can acquire critical prepping supplies. Many of these sites are not, they're not sponsors. You know, we're not compensated anyway. And then at the end, I'm going to mention which, some sites and some companies that are sponsors as well, but that's going to be at the end. And you've probably heard about all those before. But I want to start with Nuclear War Survival Skills, and the website, just add a .com to that, and you can get there, nuclearwarsurvivalskills.com. Now, this site, which again, I just found out about, apparently it's set up by a man named Stephen Harris at Knowledge Publications. And he's done a real public service, by the way. He's set this up where if you scroll down the page a little bit, you can click, you can download the PDF, which is hosted on an Amazon S3 page. And he also sells the physical book that ships from Amazon for, it looks like, $19.49. So what you can do is you can either download the PDF, and I recommend everybody listening here do that. And again, that's free. And of course, you'll need a PDF reader in order to view it. You may want to print the book out, or I recommend doing both. Get the physical book and, you know, buy it through this site to support Stephen Harris. Get the physical book and get the digital PDF. And then I strongly recommend the following. Do you recall in previous podcasts I've talked about how to safely archive information? Like what really works offline? What will survive an EMP? What will survive a flood? What will survive a partial collapse of society? And the answer is to get writable DVDs. Yes, you can go online. Even Amazon sells DVD drives that can burn DVDs. And those drives are like $100 or less. I think significantly less. And then what you can do is you can take these, take that PDF file and burn it to a DVD drive. And when you do that, you're going to find that you can put a lot more on that DVD than just the one PDF. You're going to be able to push a lot of files onto that. So I strongly recommend you go online and you search for downloadable PDF books or free books. And so I'm going to remind you now of a couple of things that I have mentioned before. Zoot Radio. I think that's .com, Zoot, just like it sounds, Z-O-O-T. Let's see, zootradio.com. Yeah, that's where you can download old-time radio shows as audio files. You can burn those, and that way, if everything hits the fan and there's no internet and you're going crazy, you can listen to old Lone Ranger shows, not just the Health Ranger. See? You can bring in the Lone Ranger and imagine it's a podcast from the 1950s. You can also go to a site called LibriVox, L-I-B-R-I, or LibriVox.org, and there you can download audiobooks that are in the public domain. It's not a pirate website. These are all in the public domain. You can download literally thousands of hours of audiobooks covering everything from fiction to history. I mean, just every topic imaginable. In fact, I've downloaded quite a lot of those books. I've downloaded a lot from Zoot Radio as well. And you can also go out and search for like free PDF survival manuals. There are sites that have survival PDFs and you can download those. Anyway, burn them all to a DVD. And remember, the DVD survives an electromagnetic pulse attack because it's optical media. It is not electromagnetic. DVDs hold data far longer than hard drives do. Hard drives lose about 1% of their data per year. Many people did not know that. After about a decade, hard drives are largely unreadable, even with the checksum bits. And then there's a type of DVD called M-disc. M, like the letter M, dash disc, that claims to be a 1,000-year permanent data archive recordable disc. And I'm looking at these on Amazon right now. It looks like you could buy a 30-pack of these M-discs for about $90, so that's $3 per disc. And let's see, those hold 4.7 gigabytes each, it looks like. Huh, I think there are higher capacity DVDs. I think I've seen 100 gigabytes of some different ones. Hold on, let me check. Oh yeah, here it is. You can buy verbatim M-disc, 100 gigabytes each, and 25 of them for $256. I know that's a lot. It's like $10 each, okay? But you don't have to buy that many. You can buy a smaller quantity. The point is, this stuff will survive a nuclear war as long as the hit isn't close. And you can have the physical book, of course, from buying it, from Amazon or wherever. And then you can have the electronic versions so that if you have a surviving laptop or some other computer, you'd be able to access all this PDF information that you've archived. I actually, I went on to eBay one time and I bought, for just a few dollars, I bought a DVD that had, I think it was the firearms assembly and disassembly manuals for hundreds of firearms. And I don't know if you've ever worked on firearms as a gunsmith. Sometimes you need to look at a diagram, like, how does this thing work again? Or how do I get this back together, you know? So you can go check eBay. You can buy a lot of like open source PDF prepping stuff on a DVD or firearms manuals on DVD or even like homesteading books and things like that. Start gathering all this up, burn it on a DVD. And that's going to be your own little survival archive, but then also have hard copy as well. The reason I'm mentioning all this is because I hate to say it. All right, let me give you the good news first. All right, good news first. If these things happen that I'm afraid are going to happen, you won't have to worry about paying taxes this April or ever again because there won't be any IRS. All right, so that's, see, silver lining right there. That's the good news. I was like, what's the bad news? Probably because there's going to be a nuclear detonation in America, probably somewhere on the East Coast, probably the collapse of the nation as we know, the government and so on. That's why there won't be an IRS. There won't be an ATF either. So I guess you don't have to think about long-term compliance with, ATF regulations, perhaps. It's looking pretty bad. We are on the brink of a global thermonuclear exchange. And I'm going to get into that more. But first, let me focus on the solutions here because I want you to be ready. I don't want to just hit you with all the bad news here. Let me give you some solutions. So again, nuclearwarsurvivalskills.com. Okay. Hey, the other good news is the national debt won't matter. Yeah. Of course, the bad news that goes with that is you won't have any of your assets that are in electronic form. The only thing that will matter at that point is what you physically have in your possession. You know, gold, silver, ammo, land, all these things we've talked about. But I want to go through a bit of the table of contents of this book, Nuclear War Survival Skills, by Cresson Carney, and just kind of give you an overview. What's great about this book, well, let me read the subtitle here. This was originally published at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory. It is, let's see, this is the newly revised and updated, but this is from the 1980s, I think. And it goes through all the physics of how nuclear weapons work. The fallout, half-lives of radiation. And let me just read you some of the headlines. Yeah, this is from 1982, but folks, nothing has changed in nuclear weapons, really. I mean, in terms of the fallout and so on. Chapter one, the dangers from nuclear weapons, myths and facts. You're going to find out in chapter one, because I've read this whole thing, you're going to find out that nuclear weapons are very survivable. They are survivable. It's not an end to everything weapon, but it depends on how far you are from the detonation and, of course, how much cover you have and how much exposure and so on. Chapter two, psychological preparation. Chapter three has warnings, and then there's evacuation. Okay. Gets into shelter and then the ventilation and cooling of shelters. And one of the key things to understand is that radiation, well, especially the radioisotopes from nuclear detonation fallout, the radioisotopes, they have to cling to something. They cling to dust. Typically. So if you have iodine-131 floating around out there in the air, it's floating around with the dust. It's not just iodine by itself. And it's not just radiation by itself. It's radioactive particles. So if you understand how to take particles out of the air, which means having a really good HEPA filtration system and then sealing up your windows and doors and so on, and understanding how long the iodine-131 half-life is, which is 8 days, and then understanding what does half-life mean and how many half-lives does it take before something becomes safe, and that depends on how far away you are, you know, what's the density of iodine-131. But if you have a good HEPA filter and you're running it in your house and you've sealed off the outside air, then what you're doing is you're trapping all the radioactive particles on your filter element, which is good. And then you stay away from that filter element because that's where the radiation is. And remember, the real danger is breathing in dust particles that have radioisotopes attached to them, because then that's radiating you from the inside. And also remember that the shorter the half-life of something, the more radiation it's giving off per unit of time. So let's compare this. Iodine-131 half-life of 8 days. Cesium-137 has a half-life of, I think, 29 years. So if I ask you, which one is giving off more radiation, you know, ounce per ounce or gram per gram, some people might think, well, cesium-137, it's got a half-life of 29 years. 29 is bigger than 8. No, that would not earn you an A in physics. The iodine-131 is far more dangerous because its half-life is only 8 days, which means it's giving up half its mass in 8 days. That's being converted into energy, which is the ionizing radiation. Whereas cesium-137 has a half-life, you know, 29 years. So cesium is a very low level of radiation that takes much longer to convert its mass into energy. The other thing is, well, how many half-lives does it take for something to become safe? Typically, the answer is 10 half-lives. So it takes 10 times the half-life in terms of duration in order for that radioisotope contaminant to be considered gone. So let's say there's a nuclear explosion 50 miles from you. The air is full of iodine-131. And you're wondering, well, the half-life is 8 days. How many half-lives do I have to stay in my house with the filters turned on and the windows sealed up? How many half-lives do I have to do that before I can go outside without dying of radiation? Well, let's say on day one, the radiation exposure is 100%. Because right after the nuke, okay, you're getting 100% exposure, whatever that is. 8 days later, your exposure is 50%. Because half of it's gone in 8 days. Another 8 days later, your exposure is half of that, which is now 25% of the original, right? And then another 8 days is 12.5% and so on. So it keeps going to half and half and half. And so 3 weeks into it, you are down to 1/8 of the original exposure. Now, is that 1/8 safe for you? There are ways to determine that with Geiger counters and so on, but it's certainly a lot safer than it was on day one. Now, for cesium-137, it's important to understand where it goes. It goes into the soils and the grasses, and it replaces or mimics potassium in botany. And this causes, when cows are feeding on fields that contain a lot of cesium-137, from fallout, then the cows tend to give milk that is radioactive because the cesium is in the milk. And so if you're drinking cow's milk from areas with fallout, like, for example, Chernobyl, you know, back after the accident in 1986, you would be drinking milk full of cesium-137, and it would go into your cells everywhere that potassium goes. So it's important to also understand where these elements tend to go in your body if you are exposed to them. Iodine-131 doesn't go where potassium goes. It goes where iodine goes. Where does iodine go in your body? It goes into your thyroid and other endocrine system glands, but mostly focuses on your thyroid. And that's why people take iodine as a protective mechanism to bind up all the iodine receptor sites on their thyroid gland, so that if they're exposed to iodine-131 in the air, that iodine is not going to end up all concentrated on the thyroid and burn out the thyroid, you see. So it's like the iodine-131 is trying to get into the thyroid, and the other iodine molecules are saying, the seats are full, theater's full, or parking lot's full, go park somewhere else. And if you can just avoid concentrating iodine on your thyroid, eventually your body will get rid of it. Actually, fairly quickly, your body will just pass it through, and you won't have long-term health effects from short-term iodine exposure. There's so many principles to go over here. I can't go into them all, but one very important principle to understand is that a little bit of radiation exposure over time, even if it adds up to a lot, is not nearly as dangerous as the same amount of aggregate exposure in a short period of time. So in other words, what are the terms? Becquerels? is that how you pronounce it? I know there are different, microsiemens, I think, is another, or is it microsieverts? Yeah, it's the Becquerel, known as BQ. That's an international unit. Let's see, there's another unit called the Curie, named after, you know, the scientist Curie who died from radiation exposure. There's also, let's see, sieverts, or REMS. That's used in the U.S. So sieverts, and of course the term microsievert means 1/1,000,000th of a sievert, just as I suppose a micro rem would be 1/1,000,000th of a rem, but we don't usually hear that, just hear rems. Nevertheless, these are describing doses of radiation. And understand that if you have a way to spread out radiation over time, it's much more survivable. So what kills people is a lot of radiation all at once. But because your body is able to repair broken chromosomes. Remember this discussion from the spike protein? Remember how the spike protein from the vaccines goes into the cell nuclei and then it interferes with something called the non-homologous end joining, or NHEJ mechanism, which is a chromosomal double-strand break repair mechanism. You're like, what is a double-strand break? Well, you know how your chromosomes have two strands, you know, the classic DNA picture, like twisting strands. Well, if one side of that breaks, it's very easy for your body to repair because there are only certain components that match on that. You know, the other half is a certain match. It's kind of easy to rebuild it because there's redundancy in the information in your genetic code. But if you have a double break, like the whole thing's severed, and that happens with ionizing radiation, such as exposure to, you know, cesium-137, iodine-131, mammograms, walking through Chernobyl, things like that. Double strand breaks, your body has to take a guess of like, hey, what goes here? What should go here? And you have a mechanism in your cells that does that. It's amazing nanotech, and it's called the NHEJ mechanism, okay? But here's the thing. The spike protein suppresses that by about 90%, which is why people are getting crazy amounts of cancer right now. So those of you who are very well informed, you're already ahead of me on this, you know where I'm going with this. You realize the depopulation 1-2 punch to take out a significant portion of humanity is to first inject people with spike protein that suppresses the NHEJ chromosomal repair mechanism, and then, secondly, expose people to ionizing radiation on a global scale, which would only be possible through a global thermonuclear war. And this combination will mean that people are exposed to ionizing radiation. Those who were not vaccinated are able to repair the chromosomal breaks because of the built-in mechanisms, while those who have been exposed to the vaccine will die from cancer very rapidly, even from very low levels of radiation. So if you were an evil globalist thinking about, oh, how are we going to depopulate the world and kill 5-6 billion people? The answer that you need, if you're this evil or demonic, is exactly as I described. First, disable the population's chromosomal repair mechanism, the double strand break repair. Again, what's called the NHEJ, and then unleash either dirty bombs or nuclear weapons that emit even a low level of radiation over time, thereby exposing people to low levels of ionizing radiation, thereby causing massive cancer tumors that are unable to be repaired in the bodies of the people who took the vaccines. Got it? We call that a binary weapon system, where you have to have two components of the weapon. The second one works in conjunction. The second part works in conjunction with the first part, and that's how they get the massive kill rate. Okay. So whether you've been vaccinated or not, limiting your exposure to ionizing radiation is obviously going to be a key to survival. But for those who have not been vaccinated, there are many, many, many things that you can do to survive radiation exposure. In other words, and maybe this is the real good news. Even in a world where there are nuclear detonations on your continent, let's say, I'm in America, you're probably in America. Let's say there's a nuke or a false flag nuke set off in New York City, for example. I mean, that's a likely target. I mean, look at 9/11. Does that mean that we all just throw our hands up, scream, we're all dead? No, we're not all dead. Even with the radiation from such a bomb, we're not all dead. Especially if we understand nutrition, how to repair our genetic integrity, how to help our bodies heal from radiation exposure that is far away in the case of most people. Now, the closer you are to the detonation, obviously, the worse off you are. It depends on how much radiation you've received in a short amount of time. But for those who are far away from the explosion, it is a very survivable event. Absolutely survivable. You just have to have the knowledge. So at this point, I'll mention a couple of things. You've probably heard me say this before, but I'm the owner of a patent called Cesium Eliminator. And you can look this up in the U.S. Patent Office. I think it's just called Cesium Eliminator. And I have the patent number stored here somewhere. Anyway, it's a public patent, obviously. It was approved many years ago. And this is a patent, and so you can read it. It gives you the formula. It's a patent for removing cesium-137 from your digestive tract by using certain minerals and supplements that I will mention here. And you might even remember that I said I have stored something like 10,000 pounds of the key ingredient, which is actually a zeolite. It is a kind of a not ground too fine, but it is a ground up zeolite material. And I've got like pallets of this stuff stored away in case of a nuclear war. And my plan is to donate this to whoever's impacted by this. Okay. And I've said that publicly many times, and it's all true. I've got a building with a bunch of pallets of this stuff. And the zeolite material, I ran these tests in my lab many years ago. This was back in 2015 or something, when I first wrote up the patent application using an ICP-MS instrument, which is, mass spec for elemental analysis. I was able to buy cesium in non-radioactive forms, And I was also able to buy off-the-shelf radioactive substances that you could actually buy on Amazon, just low levels of radiation that were detectable with simple instruments. And then I tested several hundred different substances for their ability to absorb cesium-137 and to bind with that radioisotope and to remove it from your body. And the substance that was the most effective was zeolite. So there's one thing you can understand right now is that zeolites are very good at binding with cesium-137. The problem with zeolites is they are full of aluminum. They're made out of aluminum. In fact, it's an aluminosilicate structure. It has a unique structure that allows it to adsorb many radio isotope elements such as cesium-137. So I would never take zeolites personally as a daily supplement because the aluminum levels are off the charts and there's a lot of lead in it as well. However, in a nuclear emergency, if I believed I was exposed to cesium-137, the radiation risk vastly outweighs the risk of aluminum exposure, and therefore I would consume zeolites in order to detoxify the digestive tract, get the radioisotopes out of your system before they get absorbed into your blood. And since cesium-137 very often shows up in food, such as cow's milk, like we mentioned earlier, the digestive tract is the right place to block it. You know what? I'm just remembering this now. We have a website called cesiumeliminator.com that kind of explains all this. It doesn't sell it. This is not something for sale. Let's see. And it shows a 95.44% average reduction of cesium elements using this formula, which is primarily made out of zeolites. However, in order to block the aluminum, it's best to combine zeolites with some other ingredients, such as heavy metals absorbing ingredients, or things like fruit pectin. So fruit fiber is the best at binding with lots of heavy metals, strawberry fibers, for example. Different kinds of fruit fibers, grapefruit, oranges, citrus, and so on. So I'm just passing this along out of goodwill because of the global emergency that we're facing. But if you think you're exposed to cesium radiation through food or water, it's also very prominent in water after fallout, then think about consuming zeolites with a ton of fruit fiber in order to push out the aluminum. And you're going to get some aluminum exposure, no question about it. But the zeolites will absorb 95%, 95.44% of the cesium-137. So that's good to know, right? Good to know. And in our research, we were also able to document which natural substances block lead, mercury, cadmium, and arsenic, i.e. heavy metals. And there are some very effective substances that do that. But in terms of the simplest things to know, a lot of it comes down to fruit pectin. Like I said, there's also a marine magnesium that we found that works very well for that purpose. So I think some of our final formulation for this was zeolites with a marine magnesium and some fibers. I think that was the best combination that we came up with. Anyway, it's all public information. It's in the patents. And this is something I've anticipated for quite some time. But getting back to the book, Nuclear War Survival Skills. So it covers, let's see, chapter 8 is about water. Chapter 9 is about food. This is what we've been talking about. And then it covers fallout meters, shelter sanitation, surviving without doctors. That's because, yeah, doctors mostly have taken the spike protein, right? Let's see, expedient shelter furnishings, improvised clothing, and protective items. Tip, you can wear an old mask as a pair of shorts. Someone tell Biden that. Chapter 16, minimum pre-crisis preparations. Let's see, expedient fallout shelters and so on and so forth. Anyway, it's got drawings, it's got reference materials, all kinds of stuff. So add that to your collection. Enjoy reading up about radiation. Now, when you're done with all that, make sure you download the free audiobook that I've authored called Survival Nutrition. I know many of you, maybe most of you, have already heard that book, and that's great. And if you haven't, or if you don't have the files or don't remember where you put them, go to survivalnutrition.com, enter your email there, and you can download all the files for free immediately, including a printable PDF transcript. And you can hand that out to the hearing impaired so they can enjoy that information. Survival Nutrition is, it's just chock full of just amazing. Well, it's not me saying it. It's the feedback we get. People love it. Amazing information about how to use nutrition and superfoods, everything from first aid to accelerated healing, all kinds of things like that. So those are the two books to check out for starters. Now, I'm going to go through a list here of some providers of various solutions. There's some new names here that you haven't heard before. And the first one I'm going to mention, you're going to think this is a sponsor, but they're not. I assure you, they're not. We approached this company which makes grass-fed beef sticks that are non-GMO, no nitrites or nitrates, no MSG. Okay, pasture-raised beef. It's not certified organic, but it's as close to that as you can get. And I eat these from time to time, and they have no MSG. They're very, really good survival food. This company is called SoGo Snacks. And I repeat, they are not a sponsor. And what happened is I found these online. I bought a bunch of these. It's SOGOsnacks.com. I found these. I really love them because it's so hard to find beef jerky or any kind of sort of storable meat that isn't loaded with sodium nitrite or MSG or a bunch of garbage filler crap, right? Very difficult. And almost all the beef jerky on the market contains sodium nitrite. And remember that sodium nitrite causes cancer. So for people who have already got the shot, or you think you might be exposed to ionizing radiation, the last thing you want is another vector of cancer in your beef jerky. It's like cancer from the left, cancer from the right, cancer from above. You know, you gotta limit the cancer vectors here. So you gotta make sure your food is as clean as possible. Now again, this is not organic, but it's as close to it as you can get. So I reached out to this company. Well, actually I had one of my staffers reach out. I said, hey, SoGo Snacks, we really love your product and we're just wondering, could you give a discount code for our audience and then we'll mention it for free in our podcast? And this was last year. And they replied and they said, yeah, thank you. Thank you for the offer. We can't keep up with orders. And so the answer right now is, you know, we can't handle that. So no, but then they got back with us a few days ago and they said, okay, we are ready now and we're happy to offer a discount code to your audience. So here it is. It's save 15 and that's so SAVE15. And I'm told, although I haven't tested this, and you might try all caps, I guess. SAVE15. You get 15% off everything at SoGoSnacks.com. And if you're wondering what to get there, they have turkey sticks as well, and they have beef sticks, and they have just original flavor, which is what I have, and it's great. And these are also great for traveling, great to have in your car as like backup food if you ran out or something. Could be in your bug out bag. They're very good for all these purposes. Like I said, they're non-GMO verified. They're pasture raised. They don't use any gluten or soy or dairy or nuts or MSG. They don't have beef with hormones or antibiotics, no nitrites or nitrates, and no artificial ingredients. And I'm told they have free shipping and they have some kind of subscribe program as well. I guess you can get some every month. I don't know. I haven't done that. But this is an American company. Looks like it's run by a real nice American family. That's just trying to help people get clean food that's also quite delicious, by the way. Sometimes you just need meat, you know? I mean, I grow lettuce. You know me. I grow kale. I'm blending up salads in my smoothies. I'm drinking avocados all day. Sometimes I need a beef stick. I don't know if it's just because I work on the ranch or what, but every once in a while you gotta have some beef. And then for prepping and survival, this is a great solution. So again, not a sponsor. We're not compensated. We don't earn anything. We negotiated this on your behalf at SogoSnacks.com. Okay, and then one other company that I wanted to mention, which is also not a sponsor, but someone I've mentioned several times because they have these quadricycle bicycles. So they're human-powered vehicles. I own a couple of them that I bought as a customer. And the company is called Par Bikes, P-A-R, parbikes.com. And I requested that they make one of their quadricycles for me using tubeless tires. Because one of the things I've learned living on a ranch with a lot of mesquite thorns all over the place is that if you have a bicycle with tubes in the tires, which is normal for bicycles or quadricycles, those tubes get holes in them all the time. And kind of useless in Central Texas anyway. So I specifically contacted Par Bikes and said, hey, can I have tubeless tires? And they did it. They made a tubeless tire version of their quadricycle for me. They didn't even know who I was, by the way. They did it because they treat customers really well. And again, they're not a sponsor. They've never paid us a dime. We don't get compensated. Okay. But if you contact parbikes.com and you want to buy a quadricycle, they have extended a discount. This is funny. A $50 discount if you say tubeless tires. Cause then they'll know you heard it from me. Cause I'm the only guy who's telling everybody to get tubeless tires, apparently. And by the way, if you know anything about bikes and off-road biking, you'll know tubeless tires are the only way to go. That's what's reliable. And you might think, well, why do I need a human-powered vehicle? I'm not Fred Flintstone, little feet running underneath. Because you're going to have no fuel for all your other cars and trucks and everything. You can only stockpile so much of that. So how are you going to get to and from the barter site, the bonanza, the flea market, wherever you're going to do your barter? Can I buy butter with silver? You know, how are you going to get there? It might be far away. You're going to wish you had a vehicle. You're also going to wish you had a vehicle that was quiet. Because you don't want to be on a motorcycle that somebody can hear coming and set up a bad trap or something. So you jump in this quadricycle. And well, this is just me. You can also carry a rifle while you're biking. But just for self-defense, you know? The hard part is shifting gears while you're reloading and clearing jams. There's the trick right there. It's like, I went from fifth to sixth and then I had to reload and I had a jam and I was under fire and I kept pedaling. Thank God the tires were tubeless. It got me out of a jam. Anyway, that company is parbikes.com. They'll probably hear this. They'll be laughing about the rifle joke. But you can bike with a sidearm with a pistol on your belt because I do that all the time. Okay, now for more solutions here, and the following are sponsors in one way or another, but there's still very good solutions, but I just want to mention that as a disclaimer. The following are sponsors from time to time. One of them is a company I've mentioned before, Dawson Knives. I just interviewed John Roy from Dawson Knives. I interviewed him a few hours ago. It was an amazing interview about the metallurgy of making blades, knives, machetes, swords, and I learned that their specific treatment process, the heat treatment, makes their knives and swords incredibly resilient and resistant to fracturing, and also very, well, how do you say, you can bend them and they'll spring back into shape without shattering. Even though they use the same metal, well, it's a powdered metal called CPMV 3V and also CPM MagnaCut, which are like light years ahead of ancient Japanese sword making. But because of their specific treatment, their products are vastly superior, hold an edge better, have more Rockwell hardness, and so on. So if you want the best survival knife, skinning knife, hunting knife of your lifetime, and again, this is not an ad. They did not pay me for this today. They pay on other days, but not today. It's DawsonKnives.com. And, I own several of their katanas and one of their swords called the Windstorm. And I'm just elated about their blades. I'm just like, oh my God, this is so good. All right. Then there's, in terms of knowledge, there is the Marjorie Wildcraft event coming up on March 12th. And I mentioned it yesterday. You can go to the website, icangrowfood.com, sign up for free. It's a docu-series system. You can watch it all for free, you know, and you have the option to buy the digital downloads, but you don't have to. And that's Marjorie. I consider Marjorie a friend. She's very knowledgeable. She can teach you how to grow a boatload of food very quickly with very little knowledge. In fact, I was joking yesterday. Her whole system is like, how to grow food if you're completely out of shape and have no clue where to begin. And that should be the title of her course. In horrible sandy soils with no water and radiation raining down upon you. Like that. No, seriously. If anybody can grow food in those conditions, it's Marjorie. So icangrowfood.com. Launches March 12th. I also mentioned yesterday, this is a sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store. You know, you've heard me mention them many times. They're out of satellite phones. They're gone. They're just gone. There's no more sat phones for months now because of Ukraine and Russia. And the only thing they have now is two-way satellite messaging devices. They're called Bivy Sticks. I think it costs you about $50 a month for, I think it's unlimited text messaging. And they send you the device for free. And you can check that out at SAT123.com for emergency satellite texting communications. And then, you know, we have a sponsor for gold and silver, and it's Treasure Island. And the way you reach them is BrightionMetals.com for physical gold and silver. And I want to encourage you, and again, none of these companies are paying for this today. I want to encourage you. Get physical gold and silver no matter where you get it from. So maybe you have a local dealer that you love best, that you know, and you can go do it in person. Go do it. I would just urge you, stay away from numismatic coins. You don't need historical collector's coins, in my opinion, for this purpose. You need ounces of gold and silver in your hands, you know, buried in your yard, hidden in the walls, whatever you got to do. Get your hands on physical gold and silver through the best way that you know how to get it. And right now, and I interviewed Steve Quayle on this a few hours ago also. I did a couple interviews. And Steve Quayle said the silver coins are 30 days out right now, or at least the ones that he's getting, 30 days out. I don't know what's in stock. I don't know what's available right now. You'll have to go to BrightionMetals.com, talk to Treasure Island, ask them what do they have. I know there was an issue with a bunch of Britannia coins that got, there was a supply issue a few months back because of some misstamping problems. I know the Australian kangaroos have been available for a while. The US Mint is months behind. I don't know the situation, honestly. But see what's available now if you want to get some physical. Now, in addition to that, and I've mentioned this the last couple of days, stock up on baking soda. It's dirt cheap. You can get it for less than a dollar a pound. It's like 50 cents a pound. There's 1,000 uses for baking soda around the home, personal care, cleaning, you know, all kinds of things. Stock up on baking soda. You'll find it very useful. And there's videos up on Brighton.com about how to use baking soda. Remember that? It's like, you know, powder your mattress. I still haven't figured that one out. like slap your butt with baking soda. There's a lot of uses, and they're not all jokes. You know, serious stuff. I like to stock up on other things too. A lot of this is not very expensive, like borax for cleaning and laundry detergent, isopropyl alcohol for emergency first aid, things like that. Not a bad idea to have paper towels and tissues and toilet paper to some degree. You don't have to go crazy. This isn't the great toilet paper drought of 2020. But think about what's going to run out that you really want when or if there is a nuclear detonation on planet Earth. We're talking escalation of World War III. We're talking bad things. And I think we're very close to that. In fact, I'm going to talk about that next. So this kind of wraps up the suggestions of solutions. I apologize if I've left anybody out. It seems like I'm leaving somebody out accidentally. I'm not sure who it is. I'll probably hear about it tomorrow. How come you didn't mention us? I'm sorry. I'm working on it. Oh yeah, you know what? Not a specific company, but just a general thing. Water filters. You gotta have water filters because you have to filter out the particles that might be radioactive. And of course, if the grid's down, you need a gravity filter of some kind. To me, it doesn't even matter what brand name, as long as it works. If it's effective, get it. And I think that some of the more popular brand names of gravity filters are just blown out. Probably for months. So I'm not sure that anything is even available actually at the moment. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that. It's like, you keep giving us stuff that's totally out of stock, Mike. Dang you. I'm sorry. This is the situation. It's like I was joking with John Roy at Dawson Knives. I'm like, yeah, everybody go to DawsonKnives.com and check out the amazing selection of hundreds of knives that are all sold out. Like, all you can do is window shopping. You can't actually get them. Actually, the truth is, and he told me this in the interview, they put knives into inventory every Friday, typically. That's like a lot of knives and swords and blades and everything. And then apparently you can sign up there to be alerted when something's back in stock. We have that function in our shopping cart too. And so they put something in inventory, everybody gets an email alert, and then the knives are gone in. If you want, it looks like it's always out of inventory, but actually they're providing a lot of knives to a lot of people. All right. Now, so anyway, that's it for the recommendations right now. For the next section of this podcast, we're going to talk about the analysis of why I think we're headed for nuclear war. All right. In this part of the podcast, we're going to focus on the analysis of why I think we're headed for a nuclear conflict. A few days ago, I was thinking that the risk of cyber warfare was far higher than nuclear warfare, but things have happened since then that have now flipped those positions in my own analysis, and I'm going to share some of that with you here today. I do want to mention there's an upcoming event in Grapevine, Texas. It's on March 17th through the 20th. It's an in-person event. I'm speaking with a pre-recorded video, but it is exclusive to this event. And the people speaking there are some really amazing people, including Jamie Walden. And I'm a fan of Jamie Walden. Clay Clark is there. Coach Dave is there. Dave Hodges. Sheila Zielinski. John and Chelsea Jubilee from Energize Health are there. And a lot of other great people. And so they invited me to send in a video with a message for that audience on that day. And I'm happy to do that. And happy to mention their event. I think tickets are still available. Again, it's Grapevine, Texas. And I think Grapevine, I'm thinking it's kind of near, is it near Dallas-Fort Worth? I'm sorry, I don't know all the geography of this great state, so I apologize for that. But if you know where Grapevine is and you want to be there to check it out, the website for this is hearthewatchmen.com. Got it? Hear the watch, like H-E-A-R, hear it with your ears, hearthewatchman.com. And I think we're also live streaming that event on Brighton, but I'm not 100% sure about that yet, so I'll have to double check that. Okay, shifting gears here, there's Vernon Jones, and I think he's running for Congress, isn't he? He's a conservative running for Congress. I know Stu Peters has been giving him a hard time over some things. I don't know all the details. That's not what this is about. Vernon Jones has mentioned a strategy for returning Trump to the Oval Office by early next year. I just want to share this with you because this is a viable path. And it works like this. The Republicans take over the House and the Senate in the midterm elections. Once they take over the House, they elect Donald J. Trump as the Speaker of the House. And you might say, wait a second, right there, what are you talking about? How can they have Donald Trump as the Speaker of the House? Doesn't the Speaker of the House have to be a member of Congress? And the answer is no. Speaker of the House can be anyone. Anyone who can get the votes of the majority of the House can be Speaker of the House. So the Republicans in this theory, in this thought experiment, the Vernon Jones alternate reality, maybe I don't know, let's see if this happens. The Vernon Jones version of where this goes is that Trump becomes Speaker of the House. Okay, we're halfway home. Now, all kinds of new documents come out exposing the total criminal cartel of Joe Biden, the Biden crime family, and Kamala Harris and how corrupt she is. Little Miss Nasal. And then they get impeached. Involving the Senate, of course, the Senate and the House, you know, they impeach and they remove from office Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And Joe won't notice any difference, by the way. He's like, where? He doesn't know he's in office right now. I'm not even sure it's Joe. It's like the guy that gave the slur of the union address, that didn't look like Joe Biden. I remember from the early 2000s, it looked nothing like that guy. He was way shorter too. It's like they're getting sloppy with the body doubles, aren't they? But anyway, they remove sloppy short Joe from the White House, and they remove Kamala, and then guess who's next in line? Oh, the Speaker of the House, who is at that time Donald J. Trump. And that is how Trump becomes the president about a year from now. You know, in this thought experiment. Will that happen? I mean, you know, if I were a Vegas betting person, I would expect a pretty high return on that bet. Like give me 40 to 1 odds or something, you know, cause that's a reach, I think. Will it happen? I don't know. Kind of doubtful, but we'll see. Now you could tell the Democrats are afraid this could happen because they're still trying to, you know, criminally indict Trump for something. Didn't they just say that the J6 committee just said, well, Trump encouraged people to engage in illegal acts. No, he didn't. That's only if you edit his speech and just string together a bunch of words out of context. Then it might sound like that, but that's not what he said. But whether it's Trump going back into the Oval Office or not, it'd be fascinating to me to see somebody in the Oval Office since Joe Biden obviously hasn't been there. I think Biden's been locked out of the White House since day one. That's why he's broadcasting from a fake studio. You know, the Oval Office studio set that the media doesn't even try to hide anymore. They're like, yeah, it's just a sound stage. You know, we're all here. It's a stage. And, you know, we have fake images behind the windows, you know, in the background. Remember that one day, the image in the so-called windows of the Oval Office behind Biden? The one day it was like, suddenly it was a cargo port back there. You know, you look through the windows like, there's cargo ships and cranes back there. And like containers, you know, big ocean freight shipping containers. And the next time, it was trees, a parking lot. It's like, they're not even trying to hide it anymore, folks. It's all theater. You are watching a kind of a movie. And that's no joke. Now, those who say, like, we already know how this ends and this is the greatest, history's greatest, how to describe it, a military intelligence sting operation to take down the global cabal. I don't know. That sounds pretty awesome, but I'm not betting the farm on that happening. We'll see. In the meantime, we might be living through a nuclear war. We might be living through a cyber attack, false flag. We are definitely living through massive food inflation because, well, the Biden regime, it has unleashed absolute suffering and hell upon all of us. In fact, I wanted to play a little video for you here from the Ice Age farmer who I've interviewed. And I like the Ice Age farmer. Christian. What's his last name? He's great. Very knowledgeable. Let me play like the first minute or so, just so you can hear what he's talking about. And then I'm going to go to that story and we're going to analyze it more. This is shocking stuff. Give it a listen. Here we go.
My friends, welcome. The effects of cutting off a third of the world's grains from the Black Sea region are already being felt around the world. We knew this was going to happen quickly at this point, but already there are animal feed producers in South Korea who are declaring force majeure. In other words, we know we had sold you this food for your animals, but we can't give it to you now, even though you're depending on it, because we can't get the corn that we had bought from Ukraine and from that Black Sea region. So I want to talk a little bit about that and what it means, as well as explore the fact that yesterday the EU agriculture ministers convened an emergency crisis meeting to talk about the fact that the war in Ukraine, quote, could disrupt food production in Europe, not just raw material or fertilizer prices. In fact, France already wants to activate the EU's food crisis mechanism. So I'm going to talk about that and what it means. There's a mechanism that they have put into place after their farm to fork agenda, which I covered back in 2020. I described that as a total takeover of food, where they set aside a lot of land and said, you have to keep this fallow. You can't farm all of your land anymore. And, you know, this report you can still find, iceagefarmer.com, farm to fork. But we'll talk about the contingency plan, and it really doesn't give you any details. I've actually written to the committee and asked them for concrete steps. Is this food rationing? Is it price controls? Is it relaxing some of those restrictions on how much land they're not allowed to farm?
All right, so what the Ice Age farmer is warning about is captured in this article at agricensus.com. It's called Fast Markets AgriCensus. And the headline is South Korean feed makers mull force majeure on Ukraine corn loss. It's dated March 2nd, 2022. So check this out. Okay, feed producers based in South Korea could be forced into declaring force majeure on some of their contracts in the coming weeks as the loss of corn exports from Ukrainian ports leaves a hard-to-fill gap in prompt supply. I'll say, the ports have been taken over by Russian troops. So the ports have stopped operating. And let's see, data suggesting some 300,000 metric tons of corn bound for South Korea face being trapped, well, essentially in the Black Sea or on ships or in the ports or whatever. 300,000 metric tons. Well, that's a pretty large supply of corn, and this is used in animal feed. And if you think about it, if the animal feed supply is cut, then you end up, well, obviously not being able to feed animals, and therefore those animals are sent to slaughter. So what you're going to see in the meat marketplace is a short-term surge in supply of meat, which is all the animals going to slaughter because the farmers can't feed them. And there's going to be a short-term drop in the price of meat. And then it's going to be followed by a meat supply shortage that will last a couple of years because, you know, it takes time to give birth to new calves, right? Cow-calf combos takes a couple of years for them to grow up and then get sent to the slaughter. For pigs, I don't know how long it takes, maybe a little bit less time. But for cows, it's basically a couple of years. So for the next couple of years, you're going to have a meat shortage, which means meat prices are going to go through the roof. This is what happens when there's no feed or there's a supply disruption of the feed. Okay, one trader said, quote, the South Korean feed makers will probably face a supply issue by April. For the time being, they need to buy as much as they can to replace that supply for April and May arrival, and then they need to think about what's next. Some suppliers have already declared force majeure. Feed makers are having big problems with supply chains now. Now you might think, okay, this is about Korea. What does this have to do with America or Canada? Well, Korea buys corn and wheat, other food crop essentials from the United States as well. So when they can't get their exports out of Ukraine or Russia, they end up having to have extra demand from the United States. So then that raises prices, and a lot of the U.S. crops get shipped over to Korea or other countries facing similar problems, and then that reduces supply for the domestic U.S. marketplace for food producers, manufacturers, you know, the companies making crackers and cereals and breads and so on. And then so their prices go sky high and they don't have supply, and then you have bread shortages at the grocery store. So that's what we're going to see. Because of Russia and Ukraine and the fact that the crops aren't growing this season in Ukraine, and it's all exacerbated by the fact that Russia cannot export fertilizers because of the banking deplatforming. And as a result, fertilizers aren't being shipped out to Western Europe. So Western European countries can't grow as much food as they once did. No fertilizer, no food. And therefore the food shortage there also impacts the supply shortage on a global scale. And you know how this works. This is the grand cascading domino effect of famine and food inflation. We're all going to feel it everywhere around the world. All right. Now, with that in mind, shifting gears into the possibility of nuclear war. Now, I received a tip, and this was confirmed by a second source, by the way, that I think 2 or 3 days ago over Missouri, over a town that's south of Kansas City, there was spotted, was apparently a fireball, what appeared to be a fireball moving horizontally across the sky at very high speed, like a meteor, but it was being chased by military aircraft. This was during the day. The military aircraft were unable to keep up with it, and it was spotted by some members of law enforcement who are credible witnesses. And this is the story as it has been told to me. So when I was interviewing Steve Quayle, I asked Steve, so what do you think this stuff is? What's going on? What's in our skies over Missouri? Steve told me, and you'll see the interview with Steve where he explains this. He says these are manned hypersonic aircraft from Russia, and Putin is flying them over the United States in order to send a message to Joe Biden, which is, hey, Joe, you can't control your airspace. You have total vulnerability. We can do anything we want to America at any time. There's nothing you can do to stop us. We're going to fly hypersonic aircraft across your continent, and you can't catch us, and you can't shoot us down, etc. That this is a demonstration to try to get the U.S. to back off. Now, it is interesting that Joe Biden said in his Slur of the Union address that there will be no U.S. troops attacking Russia. So the U.S., you could say, is backing off. And in fact, and in a sense, NATO is also backing off, because NATO has put out a statement that says, we will vigorously defend all NATO countries, every square inch of NATO's soil. We will vigorously defend that against Russians. Well, the Russians aren't on NATO soil, because Ukraine is not part of NATO. So this statement, oh, we're going to vigorously defend NATO, it's a nothing burger. It doesn't say anything. So NATO is not engaging Russia, nor is America or American troops or even American fighter jets or anything. They're not engaging Russia. There hasn't been declared a no-fly zone over Ukraine. America's not shooting down Russian jets or trying to. And essentially what NATO is saying is, oh, we're going to hang out here in Poland, and we're going to defend Poland if Putin sends troops into Poland. Well, Putin's not sending troops into Poland. That's not what's going on. He's got no interest in Poland. His interest appears to be seizing Ukraine, and, you know, controlling Ukraine as a, I guess, a puppet state of the expanding Russian Empire. That's what it looks like from what we can tell so far. So, in order to get America to back off, Putin is apparently flying hypersonic aircraft. Now, can I prove that's happening? No, I can't. And maybe there's somebody listening to this who's in the military, and maybe they can confirm it, or maybe they say, no, that is impossible. That can't be happening. Okay. I'm just passing along to you some intel that I got, and we got to connect the dots. It could be this is exactly what's happening, or maybe somebody is, maybe they didn't see what they thought they saw in the skies over Missouri. Oh, it was a flaming fireball of something else. Well, what was it? I don't know. But some weird things are going on. Have you noticed, like, Taipei had a big power outage, 5 million people out of power? Probably a cyber attack. Have you noticed a lot of banks are down? Have you noticed a lot of stuff's not working? Seems like there's a soft cyber attack going on, or a lot of probes happening right now all across America and around the world. Well, let me mention this. Steve also said, Steve Quayle, he said that this was a Hell Reaper Soviet airplane. And so I looked that up. I'd never heard of a Hell Reaper. And this is called the Myasishchev M-25. It is a Soviet plane that can kill with sound. What's called the M25 or the FEM-25. It was designed by Soviet Myasishchev Aircraft Construction Bureau between, get this, 1969 and 1972. Wow. I mean, that's going way back. Well, apparently it's been upgraded and it's manned and everything. But the way this plane killed people, get this. Let's see. Massive shock waves strike the ground along the entire flight path of the plane. Let's see, dirt and dried grass flung high up into the air, trailing behind like a sideways hurricane. This is an aircraft that's designed to create a weaponized sonic boom, at very close to the ground, flying at very high speeds, that unleashes the equivalent of a low yield nuclear weapon along an entire axis of flight because of the very high speeds at which it is traveling. All right. That's the history of this M25, which I'd never heard of before, but apparently it can destroy buildings and vehicles just by flying over them. That's how powerful it is apparently is supposed to be. Now there are also, of course, what you've seen, thermobaric bombs or fuel air explosives, as they're called. And it is reported, there are some videos, but it's always hard to, you know, tell what's real with all the stuff coming out of Russia versus Ukraine and the untrustworthy American media on top of that. But there was some video of what was a thermobaric bomb, or again, what's called a fuel air explosive, that was detonated in somewhere in Ukraine. I'm not sure where this was supposed to have taken place. And maybe it did happen. I'm not sure. But this kind of bomb kills people, destroys buildings. It creates a mushroom cloud, but it's not nuclear. So it basically means aerosolizing a large amount of highly explosive fuel into the air and then igniting it and allowing the oxygen in the air to contribute to the overall combustion, creating a massive oxygen sucking bomb with a very devastating shockwave that, how shall we say this? It disrupts internal organs of anybody nearby. Your organs are turned into mush, basically. Not a pretty thing to experience. It's very deadly. And then we have the hypersonic missiles, which are, of course, unmanned. And Russia has advanced hypersonic missile technology as well as advanced electronic warfare tech. And then finally, we have the nuclear detonation false flag scenario that Steve warned me about as well. I was already aware of this one, but he confirmed it. And here's how that one goes. The story is that after the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, that America was able to obtain some nuclear material from Russia, possibly briefcase nukes or possibly warheads that were being sold off during the collapse in 91. As you know, Russia ended up getting most of the nuclear materials and Ukraine actually got rid of them. So some of this could have come from Ukraine theoretically. I'm not saying that it did, but it's theoretical. It could have. After the collapse of the Soviet Union. In any case, it is rumored to be in the hands of the U.S. deep state right now. And as you may know, anytime someone sets off a nuclear explosion anywhere in the world, there is an isotopic fingerprint signature of that detonation that allows scientists to identify, essentially which nuclear fuel refining operation created that fuel. Or, you know, refined it for the detonation and then they can trace it back to a nation. In other words, there is Russian nuclear detonation, quote, fuel or material in the hands of the U.S. deep state and they could set off a nuke anywhere in America and blame Russia. And even scientists would confirm, sure enough, that's the isotopic fingerprint of Russian nukes. Now, what would be the tactical advantage for the U.S. deep state to do that? First, they could nuke a U.S. city, theoretically, in this nightmare scenario. They could blame Russia, and then they could use that to escalate us into World War III, a thermonuclear exchange with Russia. And all the while, you know, the whole world's like, oh my God, Putin nuked America. Even though it wasn't Putin in, at least in this thought experiment. Secondly, this would allow the Democrats to cancel the midterm elections, which is something we've talked about this entire time. We know they can't have the elections. They need a bigger emergency. This is a big emergency. Thirdly, they could declare martial law, deploy the military domestically, and confiscate weapons or attempt to nullify the Second Amendment and the Bill of Rights and so on. And then fourthly, they could probably try to criminalize anybody who disagreed with the official narrative. You know, they could say, well, we can't tolerate conspiracy theories about this. Anybody who disagrees with our explanation goes to jail now, or anybody who's a Russian sympathizer, you know, anything like that. And they could just arrest people who have dissenting views, which has always been the goal of the Democrats and the tyrants in power anyway. The point is, we could find ourselves in the continental United States, not far from a nuclear detonation that is sizable, megatons, not just kilotons like Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Those were in the range of, I think, 15 to 20 kilotons. We're talking megatons. A mega is 1,000 times bigger than a kilo, right? Or kilo. So megatons of nukes in America accomplishing the goals of the deep state and the Democrats while blaming Russia and, of course, achieving more destruction of the United States, which has been the entire point of Obama this entire time. Now, I ask you, think about how juicy this looks if you're evil and you're a globalist or you're a Democrat and you want to stay in power, you want to blame Russia, you want to suppress the American people. This is a big, juicy target right here. And we already know these demons don't care about the American people. They don't care. They don't care if they nuke 1 million people or 5 million people. They have no qualms about doing that whatsoever. If they kill 5 million Americans or 10 million or whatever, and it allows them to stay in power, they'll do it. I mean, the Bush deep state allowed 9/11 to happen. They killed 3,000 Americans. You know, once you've made the decision to kill 3,000 Americans, what is it, you know, morally just to add more zeros? You know, now it's 30,000. Now it's 300,000. Now it's 3 million. Or 30 million for that matter. They don't care. To the globalists and the, you know, the deep state lunatics, the American people are just, you know, useless eaters in their minds anyway. So I think we're on the verge of not merely nuclear war. I think we're on the verge of a nuclear false flag set off by our own criminal cartel deep state operatives. For all the reasons I just mentioned, as a way to push us into international war, World War III, with Russia. So if you wonder why I led this off with talking about nuclear war survival skills, this is why. I now think that the nuclear option, well, the nuclear terrorism strategy is the most likely approach to be pursued by the deep state. And that's bad. There's almost no silver lining to this. I mean, it's just bad news all the way around. There are other options that they could choose. They could try a dirty bomb and blame Russia. They could try cyber attack. That would be more of a soft kill and blame Russia. And that would achieve, you know, a shutdown of the banks and the financial institutions, collapse of the dollar, social chaos, food riots, cities burning, that kind of thing. But imagine if they set off a nuke in America, they nuke an American city, what that would do to immediately crash the dollar. And then think about this, folks. They could explain away the vaccine cancer deaths as radiation deaths from the nuke, you see. So this immediately covers up all their vaccine Holocaust crimes, doesn't it? And it also serves as a binary weapon, as I said, to exacerbate, you know, the spike protein suppression of the chromosomal double-strand break repair mechanism in your cell nuclei. So, put all that together, and I think it's kind of obvious what the globalists are going to do. At this point, I think it's obvious. This is one of those days where I kind of freak myself out. Like, I dare not listen to this myself because I might scare myself a little bit. It's like, whoa, seriously, is that... That is true. It's all connected. Oh my gosh. Now, could this be stopped? Yes, of course it could be stopped. Could we be pulled back from the brink of all this? Absolutely, we could. You know, maybe, again, maybe the white hats are going to jump in last minute, arrest the Clintons and the Bidens and the globalists and the Gateses and everything. Just arrest them all. Arrest George Soros. Shut this whole thing down. Expose the truth. Release all the files. Hunter Biden's hard drive, you know. And then we find out everything and the whole world wakes up and says, oh my God, we can't believe we were deceived. All right. I hope that happens, but I'm not betting on it. I'm betting on things getting far worse, actually. Oh, and by the way, there's also the extraterrestrial question. And this is a serious question. Would extraterrestrials allow Earth's nations to start nuking each other? Which would, of course, damage the entire ecosystem of the planet. And, you know, there are extraterrestrials, non-Earth civilizations and beings and so on. I hope nobody considers that to be controversial anymore. It's so obvious at this point. But some people believe that extraterrestrials have been deactivating ICBMs already, and so maybe they would step in. But again, you know, to think, oh, it's getting bad, but we might be saved by aliens, I think that's also a long shot. I'm not betting on that. And then, you know, there's some people, you know, the pre-trib people who think, ah, it's fine, we're all going to be taken away in the, we're all going to be lifted up in the pre-trib rapture. We're not going to have to worry about this. So in their view, they're going to be saved by Jesus in the rapture. So they don't have to prep. Well, what if your interpretation of the book of Revelation is wrong? What if your timing's wrong? Because I have been looking into that thing. the timeline, that's what I'm talking about. I've been looking into the timeline thing, and it's nobody agrees on what that is. Pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib. Everybody argues with each other over what's going to happen. And the timelines and all the signs and the trumpets and everything. And it's like there's not really any clear, you know, there wasn't a calendar published in the book of Revelation. It's like, you know, and then 77 days in, this happens exactly. And then on day 79, there's a lot of clues and you have to try to decode that sucker. And so if you're betting on a pre-trib rescue, you might be wrong about it. Just saying. Hence my focus on let's all get ready to survive. You know, let's prepare. Let's be ready. And yeah, maybe something good will happen and save us or prevent this. I don't know. Maybe the spike protein will just kick in for just the right people who need to be removed from power. I don't know. It's not impossible. Maybe long odds, but it could happen. I always hold out a sense of hope for optimism, but I expect Murphy's Law. You know, I expect the worst case. And that's why I'm never surprised anymore. I'm literally never surprised. I have friends text me things. It's like, you wouldn't believe what happened, man. I'm like, yeah, actually, I probably would. It's like, no, you wouldn't believe this. I went to the bank, and they were all shut down. They didn't have any idea what they were doing. I'm like, dude, that's not even a crazy story. That's every day. If you want to surprise me, you want to shock the health ranger, you got to up your game on crazy information. I've heard way, way more insane stuff than that. Probably like this morning. You know, to shock me with information, you got to come up with something really golden. You got to say, call me up. Hey, Mike, check this out. I was in my basement checking my prepped food and the demon portal opened up and then demons started pouring out of the vortex in my basement and they started stealing my freeze-dried coffee. Apparently in hell, they have a shortage of caffeine. And I was like, you can't steal my coffee, you demons. And I grabbed my AR-15 and I started plugging away at these gargoyles and they, acid started spraying out of them like aliens in the movie Aliens. I mean, and, then there was an acid vapor fog in my basement and I couldn't breathe without coughing, and it was burning my lungs. And I'm like, okay, that sounds interesting. What'd you do next? It's not like I would say, no way, I can't believe that happened. It's just like, okay, it's another supernatural, you know, event that's happening. There's a lot of stuff happening. Nothing surprises me anymore. You know, if you said an alien mothership came down in your backyard and handed you blueprints for exotic alien technology, I would be like, okay, that's cool. Do you have the PDF version? I'd like to see that. Could be. Nothing can surprise me. You're like, no, seriously, man, check this out. Me and three of my neighbors or drinking buddies, that'd be even more fun. Me and my three of my drinking buddies, we suspended the laws of physics with our minds, using nothing but our minds. I'm like, okay, either that was the alcohol or you've seen The Matrix too many times, because we've seen that before too. That doesn't shock me. And maybe you did suspend the laws of physics with your minds. But so what? Right? I mean, anything could happen at this point. I'm like, well, what did you do with those powers? Well, we used it to try to win the lottery, but we were off by one number, so we didn't win. It's like, well, just goes to show you. Sometimes these powers go into the hands of the wrong people. But I honor your attempt at rigging, hacking the lottery system with your mind. Sorry it didn't work out for you. No, seriously, man, we concentrated together. We suspended gravity for a few seconds. Turns out later they actually just drove off a cliff. Well, of course you felt weightless for a little bit. How was the landing? You realize that you feel weightless when you're falling in a gravity well, right? You feel weightless, even though you're accelerating at, in this case, 1G. I think it's 9.8 meters per second, right? But you feel weightless, even though you're accelerating. People say, why are you talking about this? Because I've often wondered, in the Apollo missions, when they're supposed to be flying away from the Earth, or, you know, rocketing away from the Earth, they're not orbiting the Earth, so they're not constantly falling in a circle, like an orbital ellipse around the globe. They're just going away from the Earth without any rocket thrusters on. Wouldn't they still feel Earth's gravity? So why were we always told that they were weightless as soon as they hit outer space? People think about this. Just being in outer space is not weightless. You should feel the gravity of nearby bodies such as the Earth and the Moon. And obviously, even the Moon feels the gravity of the Earth, hence the orbit and tides, all right? Things like that. And the Earth feels the gravity of the Sun, hence the orbit. The only way you feel weightless is if the acceleration of gravity that you would normally feel is offset by your orbital velocity, so that you're constantly falling at the same pace, you could say, that you're moving in orbit around that body. They equal each other, and then you would seem to be weightless. But if you're not orbiting the Earth, if you're just flying away from the Earth in a rocket, like in a straight line or near straight, you would be subject to Earth's gravity. So it really makes me wonder about all these Apollo missions where they show these astronauts are always weightless, even when they're traveling from the Earth to the Moon. Shouldn't be weightless all in that. You should feel the gravity of the Earth. And then at some point, a lot less gravity of the Moon. Well, I guess at that point they were orbiting the Moon, so maybe they could feel weightless there. But they weren't orbiting the Earth when they were leaving the Earth. They were flying away from it. They should have not been weightless. Something doesn't add up once you understand what gravity is, which is a curvature of space. Well, a curvature of space-time, technically. But you know what? I'm not going to geek out on you here today. Just asking questions, things that don't add up. But I think the big picture answer, and this is my final thought today. I'm wrapping this up. Thank you for your patience. The big picture, the biggest picture, is that at every level here, we're all living in a giant, what's the best way? Not just a simulation, but a theatrical production. So many events are being played out for our minds. As if we're plugged into the Matrix, as if we're all copper tops of some sort. And our neurological input is being controlled in order to show us a view of the world that is not in any way resembling reality. And, you know, that's the whole point of CNN and the New York Times, is to reinforce the artificial reality, the false, the fake world in which people are living. It's all theater, folks. History has been faked. Every major event that you think happened didn't really happen that way. Elections are not elections. News is not news. Medicine isn't medicine, and science isn't science. Your reality is not what you think it is. And even those of us, like those of you listening to this, and we are among those who are more awakened and more curious, we ask more questions, we do a lot more critical thinking, even we are just barely scratching the surface of all of this. We've only begun to crack open the door. The door through which we could experience actual enlightenment. Just cracking that door. All we can see is like a little sliver of light coming through, you and I. And we're like, yeah, there's something on the other side. Why are we living in the dark this whole time? Why are we living in Plato's cave? And let's open the door and see what's on the other side. That's what's coming next, I think. The door is going to open. Humanity is going to be blown away. We're going to be neurologically downloaded. Or uploaded, I don't know what the right metaphor is. There's going to be a burst of knowledge and awakening, and then at some point an economic abundance, golden age. Because I think we're leaving this past behind. I think we're witnessing the final chapter of the demon entities trying to destroy life and destroy happiness and destroy abundance and destroy humanity. And I think they will fail. And on the other side of that, we're going to have an incredible era of abundance and knowledge and truth. But how long it takes to get there, I'm not sure. But we should all feel honored and blessed in a sense to be witnesses to this, which I think is the most profound time in the history of human civilization. The most profound era of this planet that we know of. I mean, maybe there were ancient civilizations that went through a similar thing and they failed and they're gone. And maybe we will fail and we'll be gone too, possibly, but maybe we succeed, you see. We're at that pivotal moment where we get to make a choice. We get to determine our future, and we get to decide that we will not become extinct. We will not be exterminated. We will survive. We will fight for survival, and we will defeat the great demonic destroyers. And then we will live on, and we will reach for the stars using human ingenuity, divine inspiration, the miracles of physics, and much more. The non-locality of the conscious mind, as I call it, the contagious mind. We're going to discover that premonition is real. Prophecy is real. Telepathy is real, and it's not demonic or evil or anything. It's natural. It's not even supernatural. It's 100% natural. We all possess these abilities, and I believe they're going to be unlocked. You won't even recognize the past once all this happens. So our goal is to get through this, to get there, to get to that future. And it's worth going through all this craziness in order to see that future and to live it. So that's our goal. And then on a practical note, that's why we have to survive nuclear war. That's why we have to be preppers. That's why we have to have this knowledge. That's why we have to be ready for what's coming. It's worth it, folks. It's worth it. You ever ask yourself, like, why do I bother? You know, it's so much work to prepare for all this stuff. Well, think about what's on the other side, not just on planet Earth, but also cosmically or in a divine fashion. You know, there is a creator of our universe, and he expects us to defend life and consciousness. And to defend the universe, the fabric of the cosmos, as he engineered it. Intelligent design is real. All right, so think about these things. I know you do, and I appreciate you. And I'm going to wish you a wonderful weekend, a weekend of maybe some preparedness activities, whatever benefits you the most. Get on it. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to work on my ranch. Maybe I'll get some more food bins going. I'm a little bit behind on the food, come to think of it. Some of my lettuces are getting old. They're bolting. I don't want to end up eating old lettuce all the time. I'm going to have to start some new stuff. But use the weekend. Use the time wisely. We don't know how many weekends we have left before things get even crazier. And I want to thank you for your support. Obviously, if you want to support us and you need some freeze-dried coffee, we've got that now, certified organic. It's at healthrangerstore.com. And we've got a lot of other preparedness products there as well, including perhaps some iodine. I'm not sure if we have any left, but we might. It's possible. I know they were bottling up a few thousand more bottles the last couple of days. Those might be available. We'll see. Thank you for your support. God bless you. Have a wonderful weekend. And we'll talk again on Monday, God willing, if we're all still here. Or, you know, if the telecom is still here, if the internet is still here. I'll be with you again on Monday. Take care.